Okay, welcome back to everybody. Hope everyone had a nice break. Tonight we're moving on to our next principle, which is the principle of Shinoi or Kalachriyad. It's going to primarily take 2 core weeks to get the Yesodos of the principle down, and then after that we may take some time to go through some interesting shilas that come up in the postgame. So that's the game plan. So let's start from the very beginning here. The Mishnah Daf Tzadik Beis Amud Aleph tells us that when it comes to the Melacha of Hutzah, where you're carrying something from one domain to another domain, if you do it in a manner that's abnormal, that's unusual, like you carry it on the back of your hand, you carry it on your head, you're going to be Potter. Why are you Potter? I might say you're doing the Melacha of Hutzah. Who cares how you're carrying it? So we're seeing from here the beginnings of our new principle, which is the principle of Shinoi or Kalachriyad, which teaches us that the malachas of Shabbos are only violated if you do a malach in a manner that's normal, that's kedarko, but if you do a malach in a manner that's abnormal, that is Kalachriyad, it's going to be Pater. Now, just to give one more example of this principle in another primary source, I put on the Marmakomos the Gemara Daf Kuf Gimel Amud Aleph. The Gemara Kuf Gimel Amud Aleph is discussing the malacha of Kosev, where you're writing something on Shabbos. And the Gemara there says that let's say a person writes something on Shabbos with his inferior hand. So we have a righty, let's say, that is being kosev on Shabbos with his left hand. Says the Gemara, you're going to be pater. Why are you pater? You're doing an act of writing. So once again, since you're doing it in an abnormal manner, a person usually writes with his dominant hand. You don't usually write with your inferior hand. So therefore, it's going to be pater. So these are just two primary sources to kick off our principle of Shalok Kederach, of Kalachriyad. If you do a malacha in a manner that's abnormal, like by Hotzah, like by Ksiva, then you're going to be Pater. So as Dov is pointing out, it's going to be Pater, but Asr Midir Rabbanan. Now, just to point out an interesting practical Shaila that came up once, just to give some juice to this principle, the Chashuki Chemed, Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein, brings down the filing Shaila that comes up, unfortunately, quite often. The question becomes, let's say you have a chayal in Eretz Yisrael who gets called up to the army on Shabbos. Let's say there's a war and he's called up to combat on Shabbos. And the question becomes, can he bring along his tefillin with him? Because technically it's not needed for Pekuch Nefashos. His gun he needs, food he needs. His tefillin is not really necessary for Pekuch Nefashos. And the question becomes, is it permissible? Now, there are a few different aspects to the Shiloh, but one of the main issues is the Malacha of Hutzah. We're going to assume that our Chayal is going off into an area that's not going to have a good Eruv. And so the Shiloh becomes, is there a Heter for him to take his tefillin along with him when he's going out to combat? So Rav Zilberstein writes that the Gedole Poskim Paskins, that on this issue, he can carry it Kalachriyad. That if he would carry the tefillin, he says, for example, under his hat, so that would be permissible since he's carrying it in a manner that's kalachriyad, in conjunction with other mitigating factors, he says that that would be permissible. That's just a practical example of this principle, just to give some juice to it, this heter with the chayalim. Interesting issue. Yeah. Why don't you wear, Pity's asking, why not wear the tefillin and not have kavana? Okay, so that... Okay, so if anyone wants to argue, maybe you could wear it, but have a kavanah not to be yotzei, but still have it be an adornment because you look cool. You have these whips around you. I don't know. Okay, interesting shaila. Okay, fine. Okay. Now the big issue tonight, which we're going to deal with, is the question of what is the source for this principle? What is the makor for this great heter to do malacha and Shabbos in the manner of kalachriyat? That's the question we're going to deal with. And there are two major schools of thought in the Mepharshim on this issue as to what's the makor for this p'tor. The first school of thought is the Shita of Rav Elchanan Wasserman and possibly the Rambam. And the second school of thought is the Shita of the Sefer Hashlam. Two main approaches in the Mepharshim. Let's start with approach number one. The Rav Elchanan Wasserman in the Kovach Shiurim writes that he understands that this principle of Kalachriyad is not a special patur by Hilchah Shabbos. It's not limited, not a localized patur by Hilchah Shabbos. it's a general principle that modifies all of the Dinei HaTorah. That when the Torah set up its system of halachos, it was meant to be interpreted as discussing normal activities. That is the way we're supposed to read the Torah. When it talks about the different activities that it discusses, it's discussing normal activities. It's not discussing abnormal activities. So one example of this great principle is by Hilchos Shabbos. Torah said, lo sasa cho melacha, don't do melacha on Shabbos. We interpret that as discussing normal acts of melacha. If you do it in an abnormal way, you're going to be pater, because that's how we interpret the Dinei HaTorah. But it's not limited to Hilchos Shabbos. It applies to other areas in halacha as well. And so, for example, says Rav Chanan, that an example slash a raya to his principle is by Machalos Asuros. The Gemara in Pesachim on Chavtal and Beis, and really a lot of the second parak, is discussing the different parameters of the various items that are asur ba'achila, all the different things that we call non-kosher, nevela, trefa, etc. And the Gemara there says, as understood by most of the Farshim, that if you were to eat something that's not kosher in a manner that's abnormal, that's shelo kederech, it's going to be pater. That even though you ate nevela, you ate chelev, but if you eat it in a manner that is shelo kederech, that is abnormal, it's going to be pater. Why are you pater? I just ate something non-kosher. Says Rav Chanan, because we have a general principle that the Dinei HaTorah are discussing normal situations, normal activities. They're not discussing abnormal activities. So when the Torah said, don't eat something, it set down a concept of achila. Achila means a normal act of eating. If you eat in an abnormal way, it's going to be pater. So that is shita number one, the shita of Rav Chanan, that the principle of shelo kederech, of kalach riyad, is a general modifier to all the Dinei HaTorah. It's not exclusive to Hilchos Shabbos. Yeah. So Eitan's asking, what's an example of kalach riyad by chelev? So the case in the Gemara is where you eat raw chelev. Raw chelev is not something that a person normally eats. Sushi is getting close. It's close. It's pretty close to raw chelev. But if you eat raw chelev, Gemara says that's an example of something that's abnormal, that if you would eat it, you would be pater. So that's an example. I know a certain major posik once paskin that, let's say, certain gel caps that have kashrus issues, that he paskin to wrap it in a tissue and to eat it like that to make it an abnormal activity of eating. So that would just be an example of this, how this plays out. Halacha l'maisa. Daniel, you have a question?
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure if it's a question, but aren't other principles of Shas be of countervailing things like achshave or these other principles?
That is a phenomenal question. So that is the Sugya Pesachim discusses that issue comes up in Pesachim. So how does achshave play out with the shelo kederech? That's a gevaldik kasha. That's beyond the scope of my abilities right now.
Okay, fine.
Reparnas once pointed out that the Rambam is mashal the Rambam held like Rav Chanan. So I just want to point out the diuk that he made in the Rambam. He made a very interesting diuk. If you look at the way the Rambam brings down structures Hilchos Shabbos in the Mishnah Torah, so in Perek Aleph of Hilchos Shabbos, the Rambam starts out by discussing all the principles of Hilchos Shabbos, all the modifiers like Mekalkel, Malacha Shein Tzrich Legufa, all the general principles that modify this from Malacha were placed in Perek Aleph. And then he has a few more parakim that discuss other general issues like Amir L'Akum. And in Perek Zion, the Rambam starts going through the Malachos systematically. Now, Reparnas observed that the Rambam omits the principle of Kalach Riyad in Perek Aleph. In Perek Aleph, where he's discussing Mekalkel and Malacha Shein Tzrich Legufa, all our principles, he leaves out Kalach Riyad. He doesn't mention it in Perek Aleph. Where does he mention it? He mentions it later on when he's going through the Malachos. As he's going through the Malachos in the later Parakim, so by Malachos Hotzah, he tells us, if you carry in a manner that's Kalach Riyad, it's going to be Pater. By Kosev, he tells us, if you write with your inferior hand, you're going to be Pater. So he does mention it, but he doesn't state it as a principle in Perek Aleph. He just mentions it matter-of-factly as he's going through the Halachos. The question is, why? Why is Kalach Riyad different than all the other principles? So Reparnas said that if you explain the Rambam like Rav Chanan, so there's a very beautiful answer to this question. Because the Rambam Perek Aleph is specifically discussing the principles that are miyuchad to Hilchos Shabbos. He's discussing the principles that are exclusive to Hilchos Shabbos, like, for example, Mekalkel in its Rih Lagufa. But Kalach Riyad, according to Rav Chanan, is not a Hilchos Shabbos principle. It's a Kol Torah Kula principle. So why would the Rambam mention a Kol Torah Kula principle in Hilchos Shabbos? The Rambam has a lot of different areas in Mishnah Torah, and this principle applies in other places as well. Why would he mention it in Perek Aleph of Hilchos Shabbos. So that was a pretty reasonable diuk that Rav Parnas wanted to make, that the Rambam would be working with the Shita of Rav Elchanan, and that's why the Rambam didn't codify Kalach Rayad in Perek Aleph in the dinim of Hilchos Shabbos, because this is not a din that's exclusive to Hilchos Shabbos. Yeah, Daniel.
I mean, you could also say that Kalach Rayad, maybe the Rambam includes it by Otzah there because it's specific to Otzah, right?
Yeah, but why is it? Why would it be specific to Otzah? It applies by any Malach you do with
a Shita. I don't know why, but the fact that he writes specifically there is not an indication that it's a general rule. I mean, you could also argue you could have put it in the general rules of Shabbos, and we know elsewhere that it's a general rule, right?
Right. You could say that, but the question is, why would the Rambam specifically in the Shvi'ah Gufa, you know, or the Kalkel, you know, why does he has a whole parak dedicated to just telling us the outlying principles? He doesn't just leave them for the later parakim, and all of a sudden Kalachrad he leaves out, and he just mentions it. Matter of factly, as he's going through the principles. That's the okay.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. He also says
it by Kosev. Yes. Eitan's asking, and Daniel, he's trying to argue back. He's saying that the Ram mentions by Kosev also not published by Hotzah. Okay, this is Zoom versus in person machlokes. They have these chavrusas in this medrash where guys fighting with the computer. It's kishmak. Okay, fine. So that was all shita number one, the shita of the Rav Elchanan, and possibly the Rambam, if you barring Daniel's critique. Okay, moving over to Shita number two. So the second Shita is the Shita of the Sefer Hashlama. The Hashlama was a Rishon, and it's mashma that the Hashlama had a different perspective on Kilach Rayah. Because the Sefer Hashlama is commenting on the Mishnah on Daf Tzadi Beis of Hotzah there, where you're carrying in a manner that's Kilach Rayah, where you're going to be Pater, and says the Hashlama, why are you Pater in this situation? Because it's lacking in Malachas Machshavas. Malachas Machshavas, we know, is our big principle that the Malachas of Shabbos have to be done in a professional manner. If they're done in a manner that's unprofessional, you're going to be Pater. Says the Hashlama, when you carry in an abnormal way, or you do any Malacha in an abnormal way, that's certainly lacking in professionalism. That's not a professional way to do a Malacha. That's why you're going to be Pater. So it's mashma that the Hashlama understood that there's no new rule that the Dinei Torah in all areas have to be discussing normal activities. It's a special halacha by Hilchos Shabbos. We have a special halacha that modifies the general Hilchos Shabbos of Malachas Machshavas. That is the reason why you're pater for doing an abnormal activity, but it doesn't apply to other areas of halacha. Now, just to finish off the shita of the Hashlama, if Kalach Rayah is a special patur by Hilchos Shabbos and there's no general rule by other areas of halacha, so then how does he respond to Rav Elchanan's raya? Rav Elchanan brought a raya from Macholas Asurus, the treif, in a manner that's abnormal, you're going to be pater. Well, according to the Hashlama, if there's no new principle that the Dinei Torah are discussing normal activities, it's a special tour by Hilchos Shabbos, so why are you pater for eating something treif if you eat it in a manner that's abnormal? So that's the kasha that has to be addressed. Anyone want to give it a shot? How's the Hashlama going to address the Raya of Rav Elchanan? Yeah. Okay, so Ben, Ben wants to argue that if you eat in a manner that's abnormal, it's not called eating. So that is what we're going to have to say. Let's build on that a little bit. So Rav Parnas once explained as follows. We don't have time to go into this, but he just pointed out that this gets into an insight of the Torah's definition of eating. That the concept of eating in halacha is not just to do the raw activity of throwing food down your gullet. That's not the halacha concept of eating. Eating in halacha needs the critical ingredient of hana, of pleasure. The Torah's concept of eating is to do an activity of eating that engenders pleasure, that engenders hana, and achila sheyesh bo hana. There are many rise to this idea, but this is not the sugi we're doing. But just based on this idea, Rav Parnas pointed out that would explain, could be used to explain the hashlama, that when you eat something in an abnormal way, it's going to detract from the hana experience. If you're not eating in a normal way, you're not savoring it, you're just throwing it down your throat in some abnormal way, you're eating raw chalav, let's say, that was the example from the Gemara, so it's going to distract from the hana experience, it's going to take away from that critical ingredient of pleasure, and so that's why it's not called eating. So it's along the lines of what Ben was saying, we're just giving a framework for it, that the Torah's concept of eating means an act of eating that generates hana, and so when you eat in an abnormal way, it takes away from the hana factor, and that's why it compromises the entire issur. So that was the way Rav Parnas wanted to finish off the Shita of the Hashlama. And with that, we've concluded part one of today's shira. So let's just sum up part one of today's shira, and then we'll stop for questions. So we kicked off tonight with our new principle of kalach riyad. If you do malacha in a manner that's kalach riyad, you're going to be pater, whether you carry or you write in a manner that's kalach riyad. We pointed out how it played out in the case with Tzahal carrying his tefillin on Shabbos. And we had a big machlokas in the Mefarshim. What's the source for this principle? According to the Rav Chanan and possibly the Rambam, it's a general modifier to all the Dinei Torah. Whereas according to the Hashlama, it's miyuchat to Hilchos Shabbos Malachas Mashavas. But we pointed out that it's another special lacha by Achila as well, that according to the Hashlama, there's no general rule in all areas of Malacha, but Shabbos has a special exception because of Malachas Mashavas. And Isuri Achila have a special exception because the concept of eating is compromised when you eat in an abnormal manner. Yeah.
So if you're phrasing it like that, then you run into, then you have to kind of say that it's subjective. Because that,
I know what you're saying.
Yeah, because then if somebody subjectively, it does feel like the guy's raised by wolves and then converts to Judaism, you know, he loves raw meat. Like,
right. Okay, so Yonah's asking me for a question that Hanoah would seem to have some subjectivity to it. I personally think that sushi is objectively not edible. No. I'm just. What is that?
I disagree.
Dove agrees with me. Dove agrees. No, but. But okay, so Yonah's asking a fair question, but there would seem to be a certain objective standards to what's called a appropriate hana, you know, normal hana in terms of eating. But it's a fair point. Yeah.
What I'm specifically saying is that shouldn't you then be able to say like, okay, fine, those are the objective standards. But if you personally
So Yonah's bringing up what Daniel pointed out, which is a concept of akshave, that if the Torah doesn't deem this an act of eating, but I personally subjectively am deeming it eating, so maybe sushi is cold food now. Yeah, no, so that's a fair point. That was Daniel's point, but that is a complicated subject. Yeah, Penny. Penny's asking, how's Torah defined enough? That's a very good question also. That's the second paragraph of Pesachim. So that's if you want to get ready for Rabbi Sachs's Faher, so you do have to know the answer to that question. So get ready. Okay, fine. So moving over now to part two of tonight's shir. So we're gonna move over to discuss an afdamina in this machlokes, and we're gonna see how it plays out in an interesting halachic issue that comes up in the Mefarshim. So let's go through the afdamina and see how it plays out in the issue that comes up. So the nafkamina is gonna bring us over to the issue of writing sefer Torah tefillin and mezuzah, ksiva stam. We know that there are different halachos that go into how you have to write sefer Torah tefillin and mezuzah. And one halacha comes up in the Gemara, the Menachos and Daf Lamed Zayin. And that is, the Gemara there tells us that when it comes to writing a mezuzah, and it always goes hand in hand with tefillin and the sefer Torah, it needs to be written with the sofer's dominant hand. It can't be written with his inferior hand. So if a sofer is a righty, he needs to write the mezuzah sefer Torah with his right hand. He can't write it with his left hand. Now, there's a shaila in the Mefarshim as to how essential is this halacha. This halacha that the sofer needs to write it with his dominant hand, not with his inferior hand, how necessary is this requirement? So we have a machlokes between the sefer Truma versus the Levush. Two basic shitos, how critical is it to write for a righty to write, let's say, with his right hand? Starting with the shita of the sefer Truma, the sefer Truma says that this is absolutely ma'akev, that a sofer must write it with his dominant hand. If he writes it with his inferior hand, it is going to be pasul. So that is the shita of the Sefer Truma. This is absolutely ma'akev. The Levush, however, argues that there might be alternative possibilities, that maybe a sofer does not need to write it with his dominant hand, beikar din. Maybe it's just a preference. It's preferential for him to write it with his dominant hand. But b'diavad, if he writes it with his inferior hand, it's going to be kosher. So we have now a machlokes and the mefarshim. Does the sofer need to write it with his dominant hand? Can he write it with his inferior hand? The Sefer Truma says that he absolutely must write it with his dominant hand, otherwise it's going to be puzzle. Whereas the Levush says that he can even write it with his inferior hand. It's really just a preference to write it with his dominant hand to make it look nice. It's not going to look nice if you don't write it with your strong hand, but really make your dinitz kosher even with your inferior hand. What's the hesber in this machlokes? What's the point of contention? So the classic explanation is to connect this in with our machlokas from part one. In part one, we had a machlokas, whether there's a general modifier to the Dinei Torah that they need to be done they're interpreted as discussing normal activities. So let's take that Shaila from part one and plug that into this issue of a sofer writing with his inferior hand. Starting with the Shita of Rav Elchanan and possibly the Rambam, if we assume like Rav Elchanan that there's a general modifier that when we see the system of halachas, we interpret them as discussing normal activities. So we come over to the parsha of Ksiva, when we have a concept of writing, so Torah and Tefillah Mezuzah, you need a Maisa Ksiva, that's going to be interpreted as discussing a normal act of writing. If you write in a manner that's abnormal, that's not going to be called Ksiva. So when the sofer writes with his left hand, that is certainly abnormal if he's a righty. A righty normally writes with his dominant hand, his right hand. He doesn't write with his inferior hand. That is abnormal. That's not called Ksiva. That's going to be puzzle. So the Sefer Shumah is classically explained as holding like Rav Elchanan and the Rambam, that the Dinei Torah, there's a general rule. We interpret the Dinei Torah as discussing normal activities. So just like eating and Isra Malacha, we're talking about normal activities. So too, writing is talking about normal activity. Otherwise, it's not called writing. It's going to be puzzle. Moving over to the Shita of, our second Shita, the Hashlama, we explain that according to the Hashlama, there's no general rule that the Dinei Torah are discussing normal activities. However you get it done, it's called, you know, whatever area of halacha it is, except for by Shalas, Macholos, Asuras, there were special reasons why you're potter. But generally speaking, there is no such modifier. So when it comes to writing, as long as you get ink onto your parchment, that's called writing. Whether you do it with your right hand, your left hand, it doesn't matter. It's still called ksiva, and therefore it's going to be kosher. Now, there may be a preference, again, to write it with your dominant hand so that it looks nice. We want the Sefer Torah, Tefillah, and Mezuzah to look nice. It's preferential to write it with your dominant hand. But it's not going to be ma'akev. It's still called ksiva. It's still going to be kosher. So that is all our nafkamina now. Here, we're starting up part two of tonight's shir by setting up this nafkamina. Can a sofer write with his inferior hand? Machlokis depends on whether ksiva is interpreted as discussing a normal activity or if it's not interpreted as discussing a normal activity. Yeah, Penny. The Gemara says the same hand is dominant. It says the same hand that you used to tie your tefillin is the hand that you should use to write the mezuzah. You tie your tefillin with your stronger hand, so you should write the mezuzah with your stronger hand.
Right, right.
One more time.
Your right hand, your lefty.
Oh, okay, okay. Can you just ask the question? I'm gonna take 3 minutes to answer because it happens to be a very interesting question. Mr. Rustang, was that also? Okay, so Mr. Verstandig is saying that there might be a special ingredient in Sefer Torah, Tefillah, and Mezuzah, which might exclude it from other areas of halacha. Yeah, so Rusavejic from Yeshiva made a similar point. So it's a very, very powerful point. But we're just taking a standard, simple analysis at this point. But Pinder just asked the question, so I want to take just 3 minutes to answer it because it happens to be a very interesting point that he just brought up. This issue about a sofer writing with his dominant hand and not his inferior hand, leads to a very interesting psak in the Mishnah Berurah. Mishnah Berurah brings out a very interesting halacha, which I just want to spell out because of what Pinchas just pointed out. He brings a prima gadim who writes that if, let's say, you have an individual who writes with a certain hand, let's say his left hand, but is all other malachos with his other hand. So he does everything with his right hand, except for writing, which he does with his left hand. Says the prima gadim, this person should not be a sofer. That there's a shaila, whether how to define his dominant hand and his inferior hand. If you do your malachos with your right hand, let's say, and you write with your left hand, there's a shaila as to what's your dominant hand, what's your inferior hand. You shouldn't be a sofer. Rav Savajic from Yeshiva, he said, like, you gotta feel so bad for this guy. You know, he grew up, he loves writing, he loves drawing, this is his calling in life. And according to the Primogadim, anything that he writes is automatically, you know, subpar. Now, I just want to share an interesting story. So Penny is, he says, write 2 Sefer Torah, 1 Sefer Torah with your right hand, 1 with your left hand. And okay, fine. Okay, fair question. But which one do you get a lane from in Shabbos? You know, lane twice also? You're lane twice, I hear. Fine, I just want to share an interesting story about this point. In KBY this year, Karen Biavne, to mark their, I don't know what, 75th year or something like that, They had a Sefer Torah, you know, one of these events to write a Sefer Torah, where all the alumni were given the opportunity to write a letter into the Sefer Torah. Now, one of the Rebbeim in Yeshiva told me that he had a friend who wanted to write a letter into the Sefer Torah, was a Kibbalah alumnus, and they didn't allow him to write the letter in the Sefer Torah. Why didn't they let him write the letter in the Sefer Torah? So Rabbi Leshem, Mr. Leshem from Yeshiva, told me that he doesn't know officially why, wasn't told officially why, but he assumes the reason is because he knows that his friend writes with his left hand and does all his malachas with his right hand. So they didn't want a letter in their Sefer Torah that is going to be make the entire Sefer Torah subpar. And so based on the Prima Gadam, he was not given the opportunity to write in the Sefer Torah. So that was all a digression, which really is certainly, you know, call it application number one of our Nafkamina. In part two, we had this Nafkamina of is there some kind of need to write the Sefer Torah with your dominant hand? Machlokas Sefer Truma versus Lavush. So application one is this Prima Gadam, he's just pointing out, you know, this poor person who grew up writing with one hand and doing malach with his other hand, so can this guy be a sofer or not, might somewhat connect into our Sefer Truma Lavush discussions. That was, call it application one or call it a digression, but okay, yeah. Okay, Ben is asking a question. According to Rav Elchanan, if you violate any issue in the Torah Kalach Hayad, are you patur? So Rav Parnas once asked us the following question. He said, what do you think Rav Elchanan would say if you kill somebody Kalach Hayad? Would Rav Elchanan say that you're patur? Would Rav Elchanan say that you are chayiv? So Rav Parnas said that it's parshit that you'd be chayiv. Or I don't want to say chayiv, but it's definitely aser. I mean, there are different standards in the definition of Ma'aser Tzidchei. He said, if Vada would violate the Iser Tzidchei. So anyone here want to give the lum this? Why would Rav Elchanan say, let's say that doing a malacha on Shabbos or eating on Shabbos or eating kalach hayad is going to be pater? Yet, when it comes to killing, if you kill in a manner of kalach hayad, it's going to be aser. Anyone want to give it a shot? Yeah. Okay, that's an interesting point. He's bringing up the issue of Gol Adam. But can anyone give a lum this here? It's an interesting point. Yeah, Yona.
I have two thoughts that might connect to each other. One is that if it's a mitzvah that's resolved.
Good. That's exactly what Parnas said. That the chiluk is, you know, we have a classic chakir, is the din in the maiso, or is it in the result? That by Hilchah Shabbos, let's say, so this concept of a maiso, a certain activity, that is an activity that violates the iser malacha. The iser is activity oriented. When we're activity oriented and you do it in an abnormal manner, so that's where Rav Elchanan's saying that the definition of a maisa means a normal activity, not an abnormal activity. So if you do a malacha and Shabbat in an abnormal way, it's not called a maisa ksiva, it's not called an activity, you're going to be pater. In contrast to that, by killing, the iser is result oriented. It's to bring about somebody else's death. It's to see to it that somebody is no longer alive. It's result oriented. So Rav Parnas had said that the principle of Kalach Hayad, even according to Rav Elchanan, it's going to modify dinim that are activity-oriented, but not result-oriented. So two questions back-to-back that got me on big tangents. I really want to make sure we finish. So I apologize, but I just want to go weiter. But that was a very interesting point. So just another very good question. Fine. Okay. So now we come to what I wanted to get to for our next 15 minutes, I guess, which is the real application of this nafkamina. So once again, we're in part two of tonight's share. We have Machlokas, Sefer Truma versus Lavush. Can you write a Sefer Torah with your inferior hand? According to Sefer Truma, it is pasul. According to Lavush, it is kosher. Now there's an application of this Machlokas in halachas of Shalshuddis. So we're moving over now to Hilcha Shalshuddis, and we're going to somehow in Hilcha Shalshuddis, we're going to connect it back into this issue of writing a Sefer Torah with your inferior hand. Fine. There's a machlokus rishonim as to when exactly are we supposed to be eating shalashuddas. We know that we have a mitzvah to eat three meals on Shabbos. When are we supposed to be eating that third meal? Should the third meal be eaten before mincha time, or should we eat the third meal after mincha time? So we have in this machlokus, the Rosh in Arvi Pesachim brings down a machlokus between Rabbi Natan and Rav Shalom from Masa Machzia on the one hand, versus the Rosh and Rabbi Meshulam. On the other hand, when should we eat shalashuddas? Starting with the shita of Vinatam and Rav Shalom. says Ben Tam Rav Shalom, you should eat Shalashuddas before Mincha time. You should dafki eat Shalashuddas before Mincha time. You should not eat it after Mincha. Why shouldn't you eat Shalashuddas after Mincha? So they have a few points, but one interesting point that Rav Shalom brings up is as follows. He says that on Shabbos after Mincha time is when Moshe Rabbeinu passed away. Moshe Rabbeinu died on Shabbos, and it was around Mincha time, and so therefore it is a solemn occasion. It's a serious time. At that point, after Mincha and Shabbos, it's not appropriate to have a Seuda. Shal Shudas is a joyous time. It's a Seuda Shabbos. It's not appropriate to institute a Seuda at the time that Moshe Rabbeinu passed away. So we should dafke eat Shal Shudas before Mincha time and not after Mincha time. So that is Shuta number one. Shuta of the Rav Natam and Rav Shalom from Masa Machzia, that we should have it before Mincha, not after. Because Moshe Rabbeinu passed away afterwards, it is a sad occasion. And Rav Shalom says that this also explains another practice that we have on Shabbos, which is that Mincha on Shabbos, we recite Tzidkatzcha Tzedek. After Chazar Shas, before Aleinu, so we say Tzidkatzcha Tzedek, or sometimes we pause and get confused if we should say it or not, but we generally say it after Chazar Shas on Mincha. Why are we saying Tzidka Din? Says Rav Shalom, because that is when Moshe Rabbeinu passed away. When a person passes away, we recite Tzidka Din to assert the righteousness in the Kadosh Baruch Hu and everything Hashem does. And so since this is when Moshe passed away, we commemorate that or we respond to that by reciting Tzidka Din. So that is Shita number one. Again, Rav Shalom, Rav Ben Atam, Moshe Rabbeinu passed away after Mincha time. So Shalosh Shudda should be done before Mincha time. And that's also why we say Tzidka Tzedek at Mincha and Shabbos. Yeah. Okay, so Ellie's asking how we paskin. So hopefully,
sure we
have 12 minutes left, and we'll
most
see.
Of
we
us don't paskin the first way, but other people that paskin.
Yeah, so Ellie's asking. So hopefully, in 11 minutes, you know, with 60 seconds left, we'll go for the psak halacha. Okay, shita number two, shita of the Rush. The Rush and Rabbeinu Meshulam say that you should eat shalosh shudas after Mincha and Shabbos, not before Mincha, after Mincha. How do we respond to the argument of Meshulam that it's a solemn occasion? Moshe Rabbeinu passed away, says the Rush. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't pass away on Shabbos. Moshe Rabbeinu passed away on Erev Shabbos. How do I know that he didn't die on Shabbos? So I'll prove it to you from a Medrash, says the Rush. Because the Medrash says that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote 13 Sifrei Torah on the day that he died. That is written in the Medrash, 13 Sifrei Torah on the day that he died to distribute to the Shvatim. And I guess one extra Sifrei Torah made for the Mishkan, whatever that was for. And says the Rush, if Moshe passed away on a Shabbos, well, then that would mean that he wrote a Sefer Torah on Shabbos, and that would be Aser Daraisa, to do a Malacha of Kosev on Shabbos. You're going to think that Moshe Rabbeinu, on the last day of his life, violated Malacha's Kosev. That is untenable. And so there's no way he died on Shabbos. He died on Erev Shabbos. And so Shabbos is a perfectly joyous occasion. After Mincha time, party as much as you want, have Shalosh Shudas. There's no reason not to have Shalosh Shudas. It's a very happy time. That is the Rush's argument against Rav Shalom. Moshe Rabbeinu did not die on Shabbos. He died on Erev Shabbos. Why do we say Tzidka Din then? Why do we say Tzidka Tzedek at Mincha time, says the Rush? For a very different reason, for the neshamos that are returning to Gehenna. We have a tradition that one day a week, the neshamos in Gehenna get a day off. And at Mincha time on Shabbos, they get off for Shabbos. At Mincha time on Shabbos, it's getting close to when they're going to be returning to Gehenna. And that's, you know, that's what engenders in us the recitation of Tzidka Din. We're asserting the righteousness of Kadosh Baruch Hu in the din on the neshamos in Gehenna, and so that's why we say Tzidka Tzedek. But it's not because of this general fact that it's a solemn occasion. Moshe Rabbeinu passed away, and therefore you can have Shalosh Shudas on Mincha on after Mincha and Shabbos. So these are our two shitas: Rav Shalom on the one hand, you should have it before Mincha; the Rush on the other hand, have it after Mincha. Now the question becomes: so how does Rav Shalom in shita number one debunk the raya of the Rush? The Rush brought a pretty solid raya that Moshe Rabbeinu did not die on Shabbos. This is a big debate in the Mefarshim. When did Moshe Rabbeinu pass away? I guess there'd be some kind of like Jewish, you know, like a game show, you know, what day of the week did Moshe Rabbeinu pass away on? This is a big time discussion in the Mefarshim. And the Rush is bringing a pretty solid raya here that, you know, it's not tenable that Moshe Rabbeinu violated an Issur Deraisa on the last day of his life. And so how is Rav Shalom going to respond to the raya of the Rush? So There is a sefer called Chasan Sofer with a nun. I always told people that when I want to confuse people, I'm going to write a sefer called Minchas Chanoch with the same exact, binding as the Minchas Chinuch. But my president is, we have a sefer called Chasan Sofer with a nun. The Chasan Sofer with a nun was written by the grandson of the Chasan Sofer with a mem. And he quotes his grandfather, the Chasan Sofer. So we're saying over the Chasan Sofer, just I didn't find it inside. I found it in the Sefer called Chasan Sofer with a nun, so I have to quote it. But the Chasan Sofer comes with a defense for Rav Shalom, which is going to spin into an interesting back and forth. The Chasan Sofer says, I'll give you a very simple answer to the question of the Rosh, that Rav Shalom is a very perfectly understandable Shita. Moshe Rabbeinu died on Shabbos, and it is a solemn occasion. You shouldn't have Shalosh Shittos then. If he died on Shabbos, how do you write 13 Sifrei Torah? There's an Isser, the Reis of Kosev, says the Chasan Sofer, no problem. Moshe Rabbeinu wrote it with his left hand. Now, of course, you're going to say, how could he write a Sefer Torah with his left hand? How do you write 13 Sefer Torah on the last day that he died with his right hand? You know what I'm saying? So he figured it out. But be that as it may, says the Chasan Sofer with a mem, that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the Sefer Torah with his inferior hand. We'll assume that he's a righty. He wrote with his left hand, let's say. And therefore, there's no Isser Daraisa. If you write with your inferior hand on a Daraisa level, it's perfectly permissible. And although, as Dova pointed out, nowadays it's also with the Rabbanan. But back in the day, in times of Moshe Rabbeinu, before the Isser Darabanan was instituted, there was no Isser Darabanan. It was perfectly permissible. There's nothing wrong with writing 13 Sefer Torah. If you could pull it off, go for it. You can write a Sefer Torah with your left hand in the times of the Midbar. It's Mutar Midaraisa. There's no Isser Darabanan. There's no issue at all. So Rav Shalom holds that Moshe Rabbeinu died on Shabbos. He wrote the Sefer Torah with his left hand. It was perfectly permissible. So that is how the Chasan Sofer with the Mem defends the Rav Shalom against the question of the Rosh. I'll take your question. Yeah, go for it. Oh, good. Okay, so I'm going to take Vinny's question and spin it into what we're about to say. If you want to add more to it, then we'll hack it out afterwards. Fine. So the last step of the Cheshbon is where you have just whole cup. So what do the Rosh hold? The Rosh brought a Raya from Moshe Rabbeinu on that he could not have died on Shabbos, because how did he write the Sefer Torah on Shabbos, says the Rosh? If he wrote a Sefer Torah on Shabbos with Ma'aser Daraisa, it must be died on Erev Shabbos. So why didn't the Rosh think of this very simple answer of the Chasan Sofer, that Moshe Rabbeinu was able to pull off 13 Sefer Torah one day? Mistama could have pulled off writing with his left hand as well. However he wrote the 13 Sefer Torah, he could have done with his left hand. So why did the Rosh feel that Moshe Rabbeinu could not have written the Sefer Torah on Shabbos? Why must it have been, according to the Rosh, that he wrote the Sefer Torah on Erev Shabbos and that he didn't die on Shabbos? So says the Chasan Sofer with a nun, the grandson, he finishes off the Cheshbon as follows. He says that this issue, the bottom line machlokis between Rav Shalom versus the Rosh, as to if Moshe Rabbeinu died on Shabbos or not, as to when we should eat Shalosh Shittos, is going to come down to the question of whether it's kosher to write a Sefer Torah with your inferior hand. We started off part two of tonight's shiur with our discussion of, can you write a Sefer Torah with your inferior hand? Can a sofer write with his left hand? Let's say he's a righty. Will it be kosher or not? So says the Chasan Sofer with a nun, that our machlokas in Rav Shalom versus the Rosh, the bottom line machlokas when the Moshe Rabbeinu passed away, depends on that machlokas in the Sefer Truma versus the Levush. So let's go through each sheet one at a time and show how they come out with different results on when did Moshe Rabbeinu pass away. So let's start with the sheet of the Sefer HaTruma. The Sefer HaTruma sheet was that it is absolutely possible if a Sefer Torah is written with the inferior hands, that we cannot let this poor KBLI alumnus write his dream letter into the Sefer Torah for the KBLI events, because it'll mess up the Sefer Torah. That is the shita of the Sefer Truma. The Sefer Torah is absolutely puzzle. Now, working with the shita of the Sefer Truma, says the Chasan Sofer, it comes out as follows, that if Moshe Rabbeinu on Shabbos would try to circumvent the Isser Daraisa by writing with his inferior hand, the Sefer Torah would be puzzle. So if on Shabbos, Moshe Rabbeinu came up with a chat, he said, listen, I'm about to die, I need to pull off this amazing stunt, 13 Sefer Torah, in the next 24 hours, and I'm going to write it with my inferior hand. the Sefer Torah would be possible. According to the Sefer Truma, you can't write the Sefer Torah that with your inferior hand, it'll be possible. Says the Chassan Sofer, it's not tenable to say that Moshe Rabbeinu distributed possible Sefer Torah to the Shvatim. He put it in the Mishkan itself. It was meant to be an Edus, an authentic version of the Sefer Torah for the future. To think that the original Sefer Torah Moshe Rabbeinu was possible is very difficult to nacha. So that is a pretty reasonable assumption he makes, that he didn't write 13 possible Sefer Torah. And so therefore, if we assume like the Sefer Truma, there's no way he died on Shabbos. If Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the Sefer Torah on Shabbos, then Maman of Shach. If he wrote it with his right hand, it's Asur Midaraisa. So that absolutely could not have happened. If he wrote it with his left hand, then it's Mutter, but the Sefer Torah is Possel. There's no way he wrote a Sefer Torah with his left hand. He wrote a Possel Sefer Torah. There's no way he died on Shabbos. So that is the Shita of the Rush. The Rush holds like the Sefer Truma, that a Sofer cannot write with his inferior hand. It'll be Possel. So the Rush concluded there's no way Moshe Rabbeinu passed away on Shabbos, because he could not have written a Sefer Torah on Shabbos. If he did it with his right hand, it would be also deraisa. With his left hand, the Sefer Torah is possible. It wouldn't have worked. It must be that on Erev Shabbos. And so you can eat shal shittas after minhag time. Go for it. I'm out of time here. Moving over to the shita of the Lavush. The Lavush shita was that it's actually perfectly fine to write with your inferior hand. It's preferential to write with your dominant hand so that it looks nice. But in principle, there's really no issue with writing with your inferior hand. So according to the Lavush, now we can say as follows, that Moshe Rabbeinu, it was Shabbos, was his last day on this earth, and he wanted to write this 13th Sefer Torah. He didn't write it with his right hand, with his dominant hand, because then that would be Asher Deraisa. He wrote it with his inferior hand. When he writes it with his inferior hand, in terms of Hilchos Shabbos, it's perfectly permissible. There's no issue at all. It's not Asher Deraisa. It's not Asher Derabanan. In terms of Hilchos Sefer Torah, it's kosher. We're going to hold like the Lavush. The Sefer Torah is kosher. And if Moshe Rabbeinu wrote with 13 Sefer Torah one day, I'm sure he did a very good print also. He could pull off a very nice print with his inferior hand also. So it's perfectly preferential. Although generally the Lavush says it's not going to look nice. Moshe Rabbeinu made it look nice. So it was perfectly permissible. He did it with his left hand, and therefore he did die in Shabbos. You should eat Shalosh Shudas before Mincha time. So that concludes our application of this Nafka Mina. When should you eat Shalosh Shudas, before Mincha or after Mincha? Depends on when Moshe Rabbeinu passed away, which depends on this machlokas between the Sefer Truma versus the Lavush. So let's just quickly summarize, and then we'll just get to the Halacha Maaseh for Eli's sake. So we kicked off tonight the principle of Kalach Riyad. In part one, we had our applications of just the primary sources by writing in an abnormal manner, you're going to be potter. The question was, what's the source for this principle? Two basic approaches. The Rav Chanan and the Rambam possibly held that it's a general modifier to all the Dinei Torah, whereas the Hashlama held that it's limited to Hilchos Shabbos and Macholos Asuros, but by Hilchos Shabbos is Din Melachos Mashavis. That was part one. In part two, so we discussed the Nafka Mina, which is if you write a Sefer Torah, it's filling mezuzah with your inferior hand, is it possible or not? Macholos between the Sefer Truma versus the Lavush, which came down to do we interpret the principle of Ksiva, or if there's a general modifier to all the Dinei Torah that they have to be with your in the normal way, so then Ksiva has to be done in the normal way. It can't be done in the abnormal way. But if there is no such modifier, then there's no reason why you can't write with your inferior hand. It might not be preferential. It won't look nice, but in principle, it's perfectly fine. I digressed because of Pinny's point. I pointed out the psak of the Prima Godem, that the sofer who writes with his left hand but does malach with his right hand shouldn't be a sofer. So that was a sad story there. That was one digression. And then just the main application we had was the issue of shal shudas, that this Nafka Mina played out into when should we be eating shal shudas. Machlokas Rishonim with Shalom versus the Rush. Should we eat before Mincha because Moshe Rabbeinu died on Shabbos? Or should we eat after Mincha? He didn't die on Shabbos. What's the Machlokas as to when Moshe Rabbeinu passed away? So says the Chsam and Chsan Sofer with Memen Anun that it depends on our Machlokas Sefer Truma versus the Lavush. And if we say that a Sefer Torah written with your inferior hand is possible, there's no way Moshe Rabbeinu died on Shabbos, because if he wrote the Sefer Torah with his right hand, it was Asher Deraisa. If he wrote it with his left hand, it's possible. So there's no way he could have pulled off the Sefer Torah in an appropriate manner on Shabbos. It must be he died on Erev Shabbos. So that's the Shita of the Rush. Whereas if we say, like the Shita Lavush, that you could write a Sefer Torah with your inferior hand, so then Moshe Rabbeinu could pull off the Sefer Torah on Shabbos. He did not write with his right hand, if he's a righty, because that would be Asher Deraisa. He wrote with his inferior hand. So that in terms of Hilchos Shabbos, it's perfectly permissible. And in terms of Sefer Torah, it is kosher. Kosher v'yasher. We'll assume that he made a very nice print and therefore is perfectly preferential. It was perfectly fine, and so you should eat shalosh shudas before mincha time. Just in terms of how we paskin in terms of shalosh shudas, so the Ramah brings down that you should, in Hilchos Shabbos, that you should eat shalosh shudas lechad chila after mincha. We paskin like the shita of the Rosh, that lechad chila should eat shalosh shudas after mincha time, but the Mishnah Berurah says that if there's any reason why it's too difficult, then it's perfectly fine to eat it before mincha. So that's just the Pesach Halacha on that issue for Elit. Okay, so thank you very much for joining us. Mirtz Hashem, next week, more fun shuas to come. Shkayach, shkayach. Yeah. Okay. Have a good Shabbos.
Thank you. Have a good Shabbos.
Thank you so much.